Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello, and welcome to episode 291 of Dogcast Radio, which is, quite frankly, amazing. Hector Haynes of Entervore has millions of tiny mouths to feed, but he took time away from them to tell me why insect protein treats are good for dogs, people, and the environment. Good morning, Hector.
Thank you very much for having me, Julie. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I'm good. And I'm going to be even better in a bit because I'm going to learn all about Entervore and insect dog food. I'm really interested, actually. I'm interested in insect protein because...
Well, I'm happy to help educate and help you get more fascinated, if that's even possible.
Yes. Well, we'll see. But I'm a vegetarian.
But, okay.
But I could see myself eating insect protein, which I know...
It doesn't taste that bad at all.
Oh, I mean, gosh, if that's no. of any... Yeah.
So we... With regards to that, my cousin and I, we set out to create Entervore, originally we were designing a protein bar for human consumption.
Yeah.
That was our first target. So I don't know, for dinner parties over a 3-month period, I would say I've got dessert and I would chop it up nice and fine. Nobody would have, nobody was the wiser. And then I told them afterwards what it was. And then everyone started getting a bit upset. But it was delicious at the time.
Oh, I thought you could say, when you said nobody was wise, I thought you meant nobody would have it. No, I see what you mean.
Ate it clean. And oh, it's delicious. What's the magic ingredient? And then I told them that it was my mealworms. They weren't too happy.
Yeah. We'll get onto that later. But there is an ick factor. But if you can get past that, you know, it makes intellectual sense, so much sense.
Of course.
But
which is one of the reasons why we, looked into it. So with regards to the ick factor, in the Western world, the only sort of insect that's edible is snails through escargot. That's the only sort of where the cultural acceptance of consuming insects is there. Whereas if you look at Central America, Africa, and Southeast Asia, insects have been part of the, dietary cuisine, for the last 2,000 years. So, it's more readily available there if you want to try and eat it. Whereas here it's, still, like you said, an ick factor.
Yeah. But when I started to learn about it, you think, wow, this makes so much sense. So we'll get on to that. But first of all, we're Dogcast Radio. I always like to start with the dog. So tell me about your dog.
So I've got a lovely Bavarian bloodhound called Panzer.
Hmm.
And she is adorable. And, she's in love with everyone and everyone loves her. So, she's great.
Oh, she sounds lovely. I can't visualize her. Can you send me a photo of her so that I can share that with?
Brilliant.
Brilliant. Let's go back to the beginning. What started you thinking about insect protein?
Right. So my cousin and I were on a walk with his Cocker Spaniel, which was, running around as we were walking. It was, it was doing 15 times the amount of effort we were. And we were just discussing, why does he smell so bad, like an oily skin? And then we concluded probably it was the food that he's been on. And so we thought, well, there must be something we can do, just the two of us, to see if we can make a change or a difference. And so then on that walk we sort of hatched an idea of like, maybe we do, why don't we give it a go, raise some insects, because they're hypoallergenic, because they're not part of a dog's traditional diet in terms of the food that's readily available for them. So in theory, there's no allergic reaction to it, whereas there's an increasing allergic reactions to chicken and beef that's in the current food system. I think it's 15% of dogs in the UK. So we were like, oh, maybe there is an opportunity here for us to make a difference. And so that was sort of the beginning line, the root. Okay, there's a problem with, our dogs. How can we fix it? And then, backward track and find out, the root. So then with regards to the feed source, we said, okay, why don't we do something different? And insects certainly is quite different. And it sort of ticked off a lot of our ESG green sort of boxes. One is that the insects we fed them on organic grain from 5 grain mills, two of which were windmills and one was a water mill. They're still in use. They're organic, and so they can trace it back, to the field on which particular farm. So we would take their surplus grain and use that as feed for the insects. Obviously, they can't have any pesticide, otherwise they'd die. So that sort of solves the other problem with, like, can we make sure that they're organic? Yes, they are, because they won't survive otherwise. And so we were doing about 2 tons a month of like repurposing food waste, as it were. And then we harvested the insects. And to be fair, they're not that bad tasting, actually. And then we wanted to create a product that you could pronounce every ingredient, and that had less than seven ingredients was our goal. And so we managed to find Cobby Dog up in West Yorkshire, who were extremely helpful and holding our hand throughout the whole process. And yeah, so we came up with Entivore Treats that has five ingredients. Yeah.
Brilliant. I love that, where you can pronounce all the ingredients. That's a great goal.
Right. It helps. It makes it easier.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, because I have stood in pet shops and kind of tried to pronounce the ingredients. You go, oh my goodness, I give up. It is a challenge. That's brilliant.
What are meat substrates, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So. You don't know. And when somebody explains what the things are to you, you go, what? I'm feeding that to my dog? I didn't know that, you know?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So, yeah. And I love that it came from wanting to solve your problem.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Love it. And you know what life with dogs is like. And yeah.
Chaos.
Love
it. Yeah.
Yeah. Authenticity. So we all want to feed our dogs the best food we can,
course.
Kind of thing. So why are insects a good source of protein?
Yes. So they are, depending on how you treat them, but as in the harvesting process and how you get them ready for, you know, application in dog food, you can get protein content up to, so ours was at 46.7% protein content, but that protein content can go up, you know, to almost 70%, which is, you know, per weight makes it a very, you know, fortuitous substitute to other supplements out there. So ours was about just under 50% protein, which was fantastic for what we wanted. And then the protein chemical is easily digestible, not only by humans, but by pets as well. Mm-hmm. So not only does it have a high protein content, it's, you know, the dogs are able to absorb and use it the most efficiently.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's excellent.
Yeah.
Now, saying that, as I've said, hands up, I'm a vegetarian, but, you know, I like to, I'm not sort of a militant vegetarian. My husband eats meat. You know, there are two meat eaters in the house. but I like to know that the animals people are eating have had a good life. So what sort of quality of life do the insects get?
So, that is a great question. My cousin and I didn't have any historical knowledge on insect farming. I'm a lawyer by trade, and he's you know, an organic farmer, so not really much going on, much overlap.
Yeah.
So, we took like three online courses and read all the books that we could, which were like three, on specific mealworm farming. We didn't want to play with black soldier flies just because the level of containment would require too much of an initial investment on our part. So we bootstrapped everything. So this is our own project. So we didn't want to, you know, invest too much in it and then have someone leave a window open and then we have to call DEFRA saying 10 billion flies have flown out. That was the last thing we wanted to do. No.
Oh my goodness.
So that made the selection of mealworms so easy. They're awful at escaping. They can barely crawl as it is. So mealworms were the insect of choice. So yeah, once we did all our sort of like our learning, then we realized that there was a variable of maybe 20% between all the courses and the books. So that wasn't really helpful at all. So we ended up having to do it ourselves, which is what we did. So we repurposed an old shed, insulated the whole thing. And, you know, we've later discovered what the optimum temperatures and humidities were. And we did two full life cycles of our insects so we can get the timings down, the quantity of feed that is most, that they are able to consume whilst also maxing out on growth. And obviously, like I mentioned earlier, all their feed has to be organic. So not only the substrate is what we call the grain, as it were, the flour that they live in and eat in. And then they don't have like a watering trough. They don't consume their water through, you know, it's through drinking it. It's either through the food or through the moisture in the air. So although we had the humidity at about 60%, which is quite, you know, it's almost the sauna. We partnered with two local berry farmers who would give us their, so on a Sunday night, they'd call us up and say, hey, look, we've got, you know, a couple of rows of organic strawberries and blueberries that haven't been picked. Do you guys want to come down? And so we'd drive down and collect them all, then blend it up into lovely smoothies. I mean, to be fair, they ate better than I did. And so, yeah, that was their wet, sort of their wet feed, as we called it. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what? What I'm seeing, I think they're already filming series 5 of Clarkson's Farm, but this could be series 6. Oh, my goodness. We need to get Clarkson in on this.
It would be a lot of fun. It would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, wouldn't it? Okay. We'll get in touch with them. Definitely. Watch exactly. out. I think. Can you imagine Jeremy Clarkson with all the meal? Oh, yeah. Brilliant.
Well, so you know how, like, in you could dunk your feet and the fish eat your dead skin on your toes and stuff. Maybe you just dunk your hands in and they do the manicure of, you know, tens of thousands of mealworms will sort you out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And also I'm seeing it when you say it's like a sauna, you could just keep them in a, well, you know, a big shed or whatever where I've never had a sauna. I don't like heat, but there you go. But wherever the saunas are, we could put them in there and then you could know that you're actually helping develop this green, you know, environmentally friendly
food
and having your sauna. Oh my goodness. The applications are endless with this. Wow.
Exactly. Well, and so we don't have them like in a hole in the ground and we just chuck stuff in. No, we have them in trays that are 60 by 40 centimeters with a 4-centimeter lip. And so we can put like 2 kilos of substrate per tray and then you'd rack them and stack them. And so that's how we did it.
Yeah. So the substrate is their food and...
That's just great. Yeah, that's what they move around in. They burrow in and... Yeah, and so what we did is we found the perfect amount of substrate that would last them their lifetime, such that when they came to harvesting, there wasn't any substrate left, so to speak. It was all their poo, their frass, which is an organic fertilizer.
Yeah. All right. So two questions now.
Yes.
I'll deal with the first because we talked about poo, and if you know me, it's never long before I'm talking poo. So it's now. So just a quick question because that, you know, so they're living in their own poo. Obviously, they don't get out to go to the loo.
Yeah. Right.
So how do you, basically, you know, how do you get rid of the poo but harvest them?
So we sip them. So the poo is extremely fine. I want to say it's finer than sand, as it were. So we have, we bought an industrial sieve and then retrofitted it with meshes that worked for us that we wanted to separate the mealworms, not only between them, you know, the largest ones, medium and small, but also the substrate, whether that's, you know, the frass at the end. So the sieve would have three different exits and that was it. And so that was pretty relatively, you know, pain-free. Very loud, but yeah.
Okay. So then another question, because it always upsets me. We live very near a beef farm. And it took me a while to work out it was a beef farm because they'd still got the calves with them. And I was like, oh, how lovely. They've still got the calves with them. And then you go, but they don't go and be mixed. And my brain finally got to the conclusion and went, these are beef cows. And they are. And it really, to see the little calves rounded up and taken away, I'm like, no, let them live. And so that's, you know, I'm a big softie. So that, when I started, again, looking into insects as food, as I understand it, they get to live quite a large proportion of their, what would be their natural lifespan, don't they?
Yes. So mealworms have been around since we started processing grain. So they're not necessarily the oldest of insects, so to speak. And so that's, you know, I'm not sure how that would translate to their you know, lifespan in the wild. However, ours, we found that depending on the temperature, which was the biggest variable, dictated whether they reached maturity at 12 weeks or 16 weeks, which is quite a big difference when you're looking to, you know, commercialize this. You know, can you do it in a quarter or a third? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's really interesting. And the fact that you had to sort of find it out as you went along almost. So, I mean, are you going to write a book?
That was painstaking. That was really annoying, I must admit.
I bet. But are you going to write the book now? About raising.
That's a great question. I hadn't even thought of that. That is a very good point. I'm going to make a note of that and see.
Yeah. See, we could collab on so many things. This could be the start of a beautiful friendship. I love it. You see, and if you get sued by anybody you mention in the book, you've got the legal skills to go, no.
I hope it doesn't get that far. I mean, I don't think I'd put anything that controversial in the book.
We'll try and avoid
it. Insect farming, right?
But I don't know sort of how, I've forgotten the word now, but I don't know how likely to sue mealworms are. I don't know.
That's probably a reason why I haven't written the book. I'm too scared. There's too many.
But this is it. There's a lot of them. Class action. You're in trouble, mate.
Exactly. I'm in a lot of trouble.
Oh, dear. Okay. So let's talk, because it occurs to me, so I assume it will occur to other people. So the actual process of them being turned into food, we've talked about them being sort of washed. Being the detritus being sieved away.
Yeah.
So can you talk me through the next stages of the process of being turned into food?
So no, of course. So when we separate them from the frass, which is their poo, so the frass is, like I mentioned, it's an organic fertilizer. We're hoping to undergo a study with the University of Hertfordshire to see whether or not the frass, because it contains a protein called chitin, which is from the exoskeleton of the insect and what passes through them. The plant, when it senses chitin, thinks it's under attack from insects, so it increases its natural defenses. So whether that's a thicker stalk or, you know, or whatever it may be, we do think it could result in a larger yield.
Make sure I understand. So that could go to be sort of a natural, put on plants.
Fertilizer and pesticide. Yeah. A dual one. And so we're in the process of undergoing this study, which would be fantastic. It would be the first dual purpose pesticide and fertilizer, organic.
Wow. That is.
So yeah.
I'm telling you, we've got to get Clarkson in on this.
And
I'm not obsessed, but there you go.
And so yeah, so the frass we package and we keep that separate because that has a later use for us mind you, these are both byproducts of food waste, right?
Yeah.
So at the end of the day. So you're producing two high quality alternatives to food waste.
Yeah.
And so the insects themselves, once we've removed the substrate and the frass, we put them back in their trays for 48 hours so that they can pass whatever's left in their digestive tract. And then we filter them again, and then they're placed in a freezer for, we did 72 hours at minus 25, and that does the ethical job.
Yeah.
And then we mix and match in terms of how we dried them out. So we did we heated them in the oven and in the process of that and blending them and then putting them back in to get the right texture and nutritional sort of value that we wanted. Yeah.
But just to be clear, the when you say it does the job, the freezer, they're dead by that point, aren't they?
Yeah.
So that from their point of view, they just go to sleep, don't they? They've had a nice life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And all
that's
the right,
exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, they're nice and fat and plump on organic food. I mean, they've had a great time.
Absolutely. Absolutely crawling around. Right. So
these are all the larva, right? So there are four stages. There's the egg, larva, and then they pupate. And then after pupation, they turn into the beetles. And they're called darkling beetles because they hate the light, as it were. They thrive in the darkness. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And their whole sort of, so that helped with the energy bill, I must admit, not having lights on all the time. Yeah, heating did, but the lighting did, yeah.
Oh, you see, I can't stop picturing them as animals. So I'm thinking you pull the drawer out and I see all these little mealworms sort of shielding their eyes with their hands. And then I think, hang on, they haven't got hands.
Well, they got six. They got six alarms. It's funny, when you put the wet food in, so like the strawberry or blueberry smoothie, they would emerge from like Dune, like the film. They'd emerge from the substrate, like go vertical and sniff, trying to see where the nearest globule was.
Yeah.
And then they'd burrow in and pop up again. It was fascinating watching them sort of hunt, as it were.
Yes.
For their smoothie. No, yeah, it's very cool. Yeah. If I've got a good video, I'll send it to you.
Brilliant. That'd be brilliant. So when you said about there's not a water trough, again, yeah. I hadn't even realised I had pictured water. Well, not a water trough, but a little water container. And I thought, oh, gosh, I've gone to sort of how we've kept little animals, little mammals.
Right.
But, you know, so how, when you give them the smoothie, do you literally just drop, as you say, globules of it in the...
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what we did. I had a big ladle and I had my bucket. And then my cousin had his, and we'd go around and do all, 1,040 trays or whatever it was. Yeah, it took a while.
Wow, excellent. So, I mean, we've talked about some of this, but it is extremely environmentally friendly, isn't it? Why is it so environmentally friendly?
Mealworms are, I like to consider them the sort of the Wagyu in terms of the beef comparison. They are the sort of most appealing, tastiest meat out of the insect world, as a food, as it were. Whereas they may not necessarily be the most efficient consumers of waste, that has to be the black soldier fly. So the black soldier fly will eat 11,000 times its body weight in 10 days.
Wow.
So they reach maturity from, once they hatch from day one, in by 12 days, they've reached maturity. They've gone through the whole larva and they'll start pupating. And so they are ravenous and fantastic at eating food waste. And so that's where the majority of the funding in the insect sector has gone towards as a whole.
Yeah.
And they are fantastic at that. And, you know, according to Waste, which is the government program on food waste, as it were, the UK per capita, you know, was pretty awful in 2023 and 2024 in terms of the amount of food waste. We, you know, we were on par with being, you know, the top in the world, which isn't a great stat.
No.
And so we need to find better processes in order to reduce that waste, rather than it ending up in a landfill, which doesn't help anyone. You know, do we consider a change of the best in use and best before in order to alleviate some of that pressure? Or alternatively, you know, more acceptance of different feed inputs to the insect realm. I know that I joined UKAIR, which is the UK Edible Insect Association, in the hopes of, you know, getting the insect sector, as it were, you know, brighter, you know, under the some light of, you know, the government sheds. So yeah, so that's what we're trying to do. We're part of a couple of several novel food applications in order to get the to get regulation on it.
Yeah. Brilliant. You innovators. It's brilliant. I love it. Let's get back to dogs then. What do the dogs make of it?
So the dogs, well, like I mentioned earlier, it's a novel taste and smell for them. So a lot of the scent hounds, I'm assuming they think it's, you know, the trendiest cologne. They, more often than not, they'll take it in their mouth and then drop it on the floor and then just roll on it nonstop. So they do. So I've had that mainly with like beagles, which is very funny watching them roll around on the treats. Yeah. So I mean, unlike cats, where, you know, we think it's a more of a genetic 50-50. They either hate insect taste or they love it. Dogs seem to be, you know, it depends who it is that's giving them the treat. Hmm. So I learned that the hard way. We did our first trade fair show, and I was giving the treats, you know, with permission from the owner, and the dogs were like, no, stranger danger. So then when I give it to the owner, then it's fine. Yeah.
How interesting. Isn't that? Yeah. Yeah. Whereas cats are a bit more, I'll make my own mind up. Thank you. I'll taste 100%. First. And yeah. Yeah. I love cats. We have two cats, but they are very much sort of, you know, I'll make my own mind up. Thank you.
Definitely.
Yeah. Oh, bless. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I've tried insect food with our dogs, and they've insect-based protein, you know, with our dogs, mm-hmm. and they've loved it. And as you said, they don't have the ick factor. They just go, I like this. And,
yeah,
and,
it is. Yeah. It's new. It smells great.
Yeah.
So I eat my treats in front of you know, guests and clients. Simply because, like, hey, I don't, you know, the taste doesn't, I could add some more salt to it. Maybe make it a bit nicer. But, you know, my treats, they're healthy. They're clean and you know, it's totally palatable.
Wow.
So, obviously, with not having much of a, other than being like a poor parent or a dog owner, I didn't really have much idea as to what sort of I wanted or what the market was it looking for in terms of the treats. So my cousin and I spoke to, I don't know, maybe 100, 150 trainers throughout, we're based in the Southwest, so around Dorset, Somerset, Devon area, as to like what would be an ideal treat for them. And so they wanted something that wasn't too oily, so that when, you know, just ruin whatever pouch or whatever it was in. So, and they wanted something that was customizable in sort of the size. And so then that sort of led us down the route to being, you know, to selecting cold pressed dog treats, because then you can customize the treat size. And then, you know, thankfully it's not too oily a protein. So although it's got loads of omega 6 and 9,
yeah,
due to the oil content of the mealworm, it just happened to be you know, one of those wonderful coincidences where it, you know, it seemed to work out. Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. I mean, I'm so pleased, and I love ideas like this where, because I always think we all have these mad ideas where you think, oh, I could, you know, X, Y, Z. So few of us actually then act on them. So it's brilliant that you did.
But that's the scariest thing. That is the hardest thing. That is the hardest thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You lose a lot of sleep.
I bet. But I mean, well done you. It's brilliant. So I've got one eye on the time, as always. Is there anything else that you'd like to say that you haven't had a chance yet?
I'm an advocate for trying new things. I think that's been sort of the story of my life. But I think the ick factor shouldn't necessarily be passed down to our dogs, right? I mean, so the pet industry as a whole consumes about 20% of the meat that is harvested for year round. So, you know, if we really are serious about the Coutard Agreement and making changes to, you know, consumer behavior and trying to like lessen the impact on the planet, then we've got to find alternative means to, you know, replace certain existing archaic sectors within the food industry.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think most people are going to give up their, let's say, their ribeye steak in order to give it to their dog. So, you know, if not that there are going to be quotas or anything, but, you know, if it does get, you know, further down the road, you know, it's more likely that you're going to try and get your dog who's consuming the same allocation of meat that you are onto something else. For example, insects could be a great start. But, you know, as we mentioned earlier, they consume waste and they create two high-value byproducts. So, I think we as a society should be more open to getting insects involved in certain processes that we don't necessarily see too much of. So like the waste management aspect, that is a huge process that, you know, maybe the insects aren't used as in the future as dog food, but rather fish meal. And then you lessen the impact that we have on the oceans and the bycatches.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the farm fish are consuming insects that are fed on food waste. So, it's very circular.
Yeah. It's honestly, I have got more fascinated. It's worked. I am more fascinated now than I was at the start. it's like, I need to go sit down and think about it though, because it is mind-blowing that not only do they, you know, they're green, but then all they're eating waste products that couldn't feed us, and then they produce more products we can. It's just wow, brilliant.
Yeah. It's pretty exciting. Yeah, I mean, you get down some really deep rabbit holes, and trust me, my cousin and I have. Yeah.
It's brilliant. So where can people find out more about you online?
Oh, that's very kind of you. So we are on, we're at entivore.co.uk, and I have, I've just changed to once a week newsletter. I was bi-weekly and it was taking up too much time. And then we got Instagram, Entivore Treats, yeah. So we're on all of those social media platforms and Facebook, but yeah.
Great. We'll copy you into all the posts we do.
Thank you very much.
It sounds brilliant. The best of luck.
Thank you very much, Judy. Thank you very, very much.
Wow! Huge thanks to Hector. I really am blown away by how good insect protein is for those who eat it and for the environment. And the insects get a much better standard of life than most traditionally farmed animals currently do. Asterisk, in my humble opinion. Thanks also to Hector, we have a discount code which will save you a massive 35% on Entervore treats. Go to entervore.co.uk and when you order, type in dogcast35. That's dogcast, all in capitals, D-O-G-C-A-S-T, 35, to receive 35% discount. Now, you can also explore the subject of insect protein more at that website, and we have all the links Hector mentioned at our website, dogcastradio.com. If you do give Entervore treats to your dog, pop a little social media post or just send us photos or videos, because we and Entervore would love to see your dog's reaction.
You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Friend of the show and clinical behaviourist Rachel Rogers is celebrating because her lovely little dog Rico has won a Make a Difference award from BBC Shropshire. Clever Rico was in a Portuguese dog pound when Rachel first saw a photo of him, and he was only 2 days away from being put to sleep. Now, not only is Rico living his best life with Rachel and his doggy siblings, and I do recommend you check out Rachel's social media accounts for some very cute photos. So he's living his best life with Rachel and his doggy siblings. He helps sniff out missing dogs and other animals too. And you can hear Rachel telling me how Rico took part in the search for a missing capybara. A capybara, and that's a capybara right here in Shropshire. Oh yes, a Salopian capybara, no less. Anyway, you can hear her tell me about Rico taking part in a search for that missing capybara in episode 280 of Dogcast Radio. Congratulations, Rico and Rachel. Rico has a great name, but there are some strange pet names out there, and after analysing the registration data of dogs, cats and rabbits, Every Paw Pet Insurance has released a list of the top 15 strangest pet names to inspire people who are thinking about what to name their new furry companions and want to name them something unique. I do feel at this point I should have some counting down the charts music, you know, like that. I'm not sure we can get away with clips that long. Also, I'm not sure people will actually realise what music I'm singing, so I think we might get away with it. But it might be a very unique niche British reference. I think Tony Blackburn used to use that music. But I think I need some music behind me to give the rundown of these names. So let me just find some music. Here we go. In at number 15, Grasshopper. 14, Soda Float. 13, Tom and Jerry. I'm not sure if that's for one animal or two. Tom and Jerry. 12, Colonel Mustard. Nice Cluedo reference there, or Clue, depending on where you live. 11, I like this one, Lady Woofington. Oh, I can imagine her being announced to Downton Abbey Ball. Lady Woofington. 10, Space Cadet. 9, Sir Taco. 8, Velcro. Oh, that's a dog that wants to be with you all the time, Velcro. 7, Spoon. Is that a cuddling reference? Don't know. 6, Mary Berry. How would Mary Berry feel about that? 5, I like a good pun, Rabbit De Niro. Oh, I like that, Rabbit De Niro. 4, Yogurt. 3, Scampi Goujon. Interesting. 2, Moustache. 1, Mr. Disco Beef. What's the strangest dog or pet name you've heard? We'd love to hear from you. But that's it for this episode. So until next time, look after yourselves and your dogs.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's D-O-G-C-A-S-T radio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com.
My Twitter password has been hacked again. This will be the third time I've had to rename the dog.